welcome to Docupied, a podcast about anime, manga, light novels, and industry news. I'm your host, Brandon, otherwise known as DocPay, and let's jump right into the news roundup for this episode. Got a few updates on various anime season delays. Mamoru Oshii's Vlad Love anime was delayed. The new Pokemon movie, I think it said it was the 23rd, was also delayed. The Revue Starlight compilation film was delayed. The TV series airing this season, Gal and Dino, has also been delayed as of the 8th episode, I think it was. And Food Wars Season 5 announced that they won't be returning until at least July or later. However, we have another series that's been rescheduled, added back on, and that is the Sword Art Online Alicization War of the Underworld season will now air in July. Trigger revealed the cast and a new visual for their new series, SSS Dinazinon, which will be in the Gridman world, set in the same universe at least. The new character designs and visual looks pretty cool. I wasn't the biggest fan of Gridman, but that's just because it's not really my cup of tea. I thought it was well done. I'll watch this new series, obviously. Anything Trigger does is worth a check out, almost regardless of whether or not that genre or type of show is for me. I still want to see their work. World's End Harem manga series is getting a TV anime in 2021, and I've seen this manga series thrown around a lot. I've seen art from it. It's not one I've read, personally, but it seems pretty popular, so it could be interesting to check out. And PA Works, in collaboration with Aniplex and Key, announced a new anime series, The Day I Became a God, in kind of the third of their collaborations, after Angel Beats and Charlotte? Anyway, they announced it'll be scripted by Jun Maeda, and the character designs are by Naka, and this will be airing in 2020 fall season. We got kind of a surprise announcement, but the Inuyasha anime series is getting a spin-off sequel kind of thing called Yashahime this fall, and it will focus on kind of the next generation, Sesshomaru's daughters, as well as Inuyasha's. I was never huge into Inuyasha back in the day. Still am not, but for fans of the series, this should be something to really look forward to this fall. Wit Studios' upcoming Great Pretender series will be premiering on June 2nd on Netflix in Japan, which doesn't mean anything for the rest of us, and I'm no longer in Japan, so I can't watch it either. But hopefully that means we'll be getting a proper worldwide release date announcement at some point soon, maybe in the next couple months. Speaking of streaming services, HBO Max will be launching with 17 anime series from Crunchyroll, and I looked at the series that'll be available, and it's quite an eclectic mix from some kind of old favorites to new series. And I think they've set up quite a bit of range for people to check out. It's kind of something for everyone, but I'm not really sure why anyone would watch these on HBO Max rather than just on Crunchyroll if you have an account. But I guess maybe that's the point. If someone has an HBO account only, they can now watch these 17 series. I don't know. Doesn't seem to be a thing that's really for anime fans, and more just for people with HBO who may not be opposed to throwing on an anime series. Funimation actually announced they'll be streaming this new original TV series this summer called Decadence. It'll be directed by Yuzuru Tachikawa, who did Mob Psycho 100 and Death Parade, both of which I very much like. Mob Psycho I love, and Death Parade was actually really great and really well directed. It's a sci-fi action series being produced by Studio Nut, who did Saga of Tanya the Evil, another series I thought was really good. And so this is a very exciting announcement. Really looking forward to checking this out in the summer season. Speaking of Funimation, they announced they'll be holding a virtual anime convention in July called FunimationCon. And they didn't really say a whole lot else yet. I assume we'll get more information to come, but it'll have kind of your standard convention stuff, I assume, just virtual. will be interesting to see how they decide to actually stream it, whether that's like through their platform or if they're going to go through something more conventional like YouTube or Twitch. I sure hope it's the latter, but you kind of never know. Yeah, this could be interesting. In a similar vein, Anime Limited, which is a UK-based licensor, announced their virtual anime convention, Cloud Matsuri, and that'll be actually May 30th to 31st, streaming on YouTube. Looks like it's going to be completely free, and they announced a bunch of really cool guests, actually, already up front. I think this was just today, or just this morning, they announced all this. Or this morning as of the day I'm recording. Some of the guests they've announced were Anyong Choi, Eiji Inomoto, Yuzo Shiota, Yasuhiro Kamimura, all of which are names I'm either intensely familiar with or relatively familiar with. I think there was others. There was a kind of long tweet chain where they were talking about a bunch of people and events and stuff. I'll link to it in the show notes, so feel free to check out the coverage for that. But I signed up, and this sounds pretty awesome. I mean, it's a free anime convention streamed on YouTube, and since we're all kind of cooped up at home right now, why the hell not? I wouldn't do this if the guests weren't interesting necessarily. If I had no interest in the people speaking, it's kind of just a waste of time. I'm not able to hang out with friends and do things in the physical space. However, I mean, they've already announced some really awesome guests, and so there's going to be, at the very least, cool industry panels, I'm assuming, with these guests, and I'm absolutely there for it. Yeah, give that a check out. Cloud Matsuri, be held at the end of May. And the final piece of news is that the 44th Annual Kodansha Manga Awards announced their winners for this year. This is all stuff just published by Kodansha, of course, so it's not everything, it's just Kodansha stuff. But the best shonen manga went to Tokyo Revengers by Ken Wakui. The best shoujo manga went to Our Precious Conversations by Robico. And the best general went to The Blue Period by Tsubasa Yamaguchi. I believe all of these are published in English as well currently by Kodansha. I think primarily digitally, but they may have some in print. I'm not totally sure. But they are definitely all available in English to a degree. So give them a check out if you've never heard of them. They're clearly good enough to win awards for them. A lot of other really great series have won the Kodansha Manga Awards in the past, and so if they win, they're usually worth at least giving a chance. Alright, that's going to wrap up the news roundup for this episode. So this episode, I actually wanted to talk about an anime series. I've been doing lots of light novels and manga, so I figured why not. I'll do an anime again. It's actually one I mentioned already since I've been back. I recommended the manga, I think in the first episode back, and that's High Score Girl 2, or Season 2. I had mentioned that it had recently dropped on Netflix, so I obviously watched it. And now I really want to talk about it. Like I said in the previous episode, this is a manga adaptation, so it's based on a manga by Rensuke Oshikiri, and currently there are two volumes published in English, while there are a total of 6 in Japan. So here's your general spoiler warning. I am going to talk about plot points that occur in Season 2 of High Score Girl. So if you haven't seen Season 2, and you're against knowing anything at all that happens, watch it and then come back. Don't forget to come back and listen again, but watch it first. So Season 2 is actually only 9 episodes, which means in total, Seasons 1, the OVAs, and Season 2 total to 24 episodes, and they tell one continuous story. Season 2 picks up right where the OVAs, those 3 episodes, left off, and runs with the story of them at the start of high school. It's available to watch on Netflix now. I believe there's an English dub, if you're interested in that, and obviously the original Japanese with subtitles is available. Animation production was by JC Staff. It was directed by Yoshiki Yamakawa. Series composition was by Tatsuhiko Urahata. And the music was by Yoko Shimomura, which you might know as the composer for the Kingdom Hearts soundtrack or Final Fantasy XV, amongst other video games. The staff on this show in particular is quite good overall. Pretty much every name I see on the staff list I know from somewhere. Or if I don't, I can look them up and say like, oh shit, they worked on this or that, that I do know, and I do know their work from. So to kind of start off, I'll recap what High Score Girl is. I know I talked about the manga in a previous episode, and that generally is the exact same as the anime. Well, basically everything I talked about can functionally be cut and paste right here, but I'll kind of go over it anyway. The series starts off as a 90s romantic comedy about two middle schoolers who meet and are both big arcade gamers, especially fighting games. They play other games, but their primary focus is fighting games, and that's how they bond. You have Akira Ono and Haruo Yaguchi. So the first season covers kind of the early 90s through their middle school years, and a lot of the focus is Street Fighter 2 and its various Street Fighter 2, etc. sequels. Anyway, like I said, the series is primarily a romantic comedy, so equal parts romance and comedy, and it really focuses on all those great 90s games. So this series is chock full of nostalgia, and as anyone who likes video games or grew up playing video games, this will be immediately recognizable for you and just really relatable overall. We're also introduced to our kind of third main character, Koharu Hidaka, and they form the primary love triangle of the series that is the thrust of most of the drama or romance side, and obviously the comedy side, but they are the focus of the romantic side of the rom-com. Season 2 picks up after the 3 OVA episodes, and they're now in high school, so we've moved the stage to the later 90s, and that changes a lot of the games and arcade stuff you see around. But it also means a shift in dynamic for our main characters in terms of their friendships and the love triangle specifically. I'd say if you liked season 1 and the OVA episodes, season 2 is an absolute must watch. It's only 9 episodes long and it rounds off the story. These 24 episodes tell the complete story from the manga series for reference. So it is the same story with the same ending as the manga. As a big manga fan, I'd never say don't read the manga, and I absolutely recommend, and already did recommend, if you listened to the previous episode about this, that you do read the manga. But this does tell the complete story from the manga, so it is a proper adaptation in that respect. I personally am a fan of the ending of this series. I think it was well done, and resolved the main love triangle in a satisfying way. I think how you like the ending will kind of depend on where you fell on that love triangle. But personally, I think the ending makes perfect sense and really was the only way to go. Well, and since I already gave you your spoiler warning, I'm going to talk about that ending. Not yet, I'm actually going to back up quite a bit. Just know I will talk about the ending later. So season 2 does retread some ground story-wise. We get to see more of Haruo being pretty dense, which is not unusual for a high school-aged anime protagonist, and especially just for real humans. So not much of a surprise there. I do think that they break out of that towards the end of the season, and it's quite refreshing, and it's done in a satisfying way. But we are retreading that ground. We get to see Haruo be quite dense in regards to his feelings for both Akira and Koharu, or the reverse, their feelings for him. We get to see that rivalry between Akira and Koharu play out quite a bit, and some of the series more moving moments actually come between the two of them duking it out as fellow kind of love rivals. What I really like about all the characters in this series is that they do grow over time. These aren't static characters. They make mistakes, they learn from them, and you see tangible change going forward, including specifically with Haruo, who gains an awareness of his actual feelings at the end of the season. Well, not end, but towards the end of the season, which leads into the main climax of the story. This series has a whole host of lovable side characters, and they're all still there, and some of them in particular become a little more important to the story and moving the plot forward this season. Specifically, Akira's sister, Makoto, her older sister, and Haruo's friend, Miao. They both play fairly important roles in getting Haruo to move forward and progress as a character, as well as relating to the audience how Akira or Koharu feel about either Haro or various situations or things that go on. Akira, as usual, is completely mute in the show. I don't think that means she's, like, mute as a person, but she has no dialogue whatsoever, and all of her communication is done entirely through either physical or facial expressions, gestures, or is narrated by Haro, you know, guessing what she's thinking, or other characters kind of explaining things. Now, this sounds kind of not great for a character, but I actually think it comes off and works absolutely perfectly for Akira. She's wonderfully adorable, and I think the series manages to perfectly convey what it is she's trying to say or do at any given moment, which is quite a feat for a character with no dialogue. And it creates a lot of really kind of cute and adorable interactions between her and Haro, as well as making some kind of memorable rivalry stuff between her and Koharu. So while it sounds kind of odd that a character who I don't think in-universe is mute or anything like that just does not speak, she also clearly doesn't communicate through sign language, or this isn't like a silent voice or something like that, where in that series she's deaf, but she communicates through sign language, and that is made clear in the story. Whereas in High Score Girl, she just doesn't have dialogue, and it seems like off-screen she might actually talk. Although Haro does say at one point that I've never heard her say anything or speak, it's kind of an interesting decision for the character, but I think it works out for this story. Akira never needs to speak to get across what she's feeling. I know I'm kind of stream of consciousnessing this, but this makes me want to dive into a discussion about the actual animation for a bit. So this series is done completely in 3D, or CG rather. My personal opinion on this is that it works incredibly well. I actually think it suits the series perfectly, especially because of the arcade cabinets and games and everything like that that they're able to achieve with the 3D CG that they may not otherwise have been able to do were this a traditional 2D hand-drawn animated series. I know there's a lot of controversy surrounding CG within the anime community. I tend to ignore all that, and I've seen some great examples of CG, and I've seen some garbage CG, the same way I've seen great 2D hand animated series and absolutely garbage 2D hand animated series. So it really depends on execution to me. It has nothing to do with the actual visual decision to go with 2D or 3D. I think for this series in particular, the choice to go with 3D was the right one. And this is coming from someone who loves the specific manga art style as well, because I like the author, and thinks that the anime doesn't quite get across some of the weird, spooky weirdness that the manga has, and I think that's totally fine for this anime series. This one in particular doesn't really need that weird spookiness, whereas some of the other series clearly do. Some of the other series from that manga author, I think they're really able to crank up the action, and they definitely go all out for the finale episode, and the final rush to the airport scene looked amazing and was really cool. I think in several moments of the series, especially some of the more impactful ones, the direction makes really great use of some of the unique properties of CG to crank that impact up, and I think it really works. Some of the visual gags and humors work really well with the CG. As always, Haro getting nailed by Gia in his car is really funny, and that comes across really well in CG, I think. But I think some of the bigger reasons that I think the CG fit this really well are it's able to portray the characters, their interactions, and the arcade games that they're playing really effectively. Another real standout for this show, and this goes for the whole show, not just season 2, is the soundtrack. It's this wonderful mix of nostalgic 90s game stuff and more modern game-like sounding compositions. The composer has worked in video games and knows exactly what makes a good video game soundtrack, and this actually translated surprisingly well to anime. And this is a soundtrack I'd gladly buy and go listen to on its own, separate from the anime series. So rounding that back to some of the plot developments, I said I was going to talk about the ending, and I'm going to. This series has a fairly definitive conclusion, especially with regards to the love triangle. I know the end of season 1 had a kind of similar challenge to the love triangle, and you might think that they're somewhat rehashing that in the ending for season two, but the actual way it plays out is far more direct with a definitive answer. Over the course of this season, Haruo has been either forcibly, through some of the other characters like Makoto or Miao, gaining awareness of his own feelings and the feelings of those around him, so Akira and Koharu. Personally, I don't think I ever saw Koharu as having a single chance to ever win this. Akira and Haruo's relationship has always been its own special thing from day one, and it is the core of the series. But I'm really glad that Koharu was a character and was able to bring something to this plot besides being kind of a third wheel for drama. She pushes Haruo, forces him to grow in various ways, and same with Akira. She helps Akira come to terms with her feelings through their rivalry. I think season two really shows that rivalry quite well, along with the actual outcomes of those actions. So kind of unsurprisingly, Akira's parents have decided to force her to move back to LA at the end of the season. Haruo only learns of this in the last episode, and after finally realizing how he feels, he ends up turning down Koharu and using another video game tournament in Osaka as an excuse to confront Akira with his feelings. The kind of classic, if I win, I'm going to confess. However, she has a side plot going there where if she wins, she's going to sever ties because she has to move back to LA. And so this is their final grudge match, essentially. And throughout the story, it's super clear how much both Akira loves Haruo and Haruo loves Akira. There's no ambiguity here, really. They are so intertwined. I never thought that there was any other way this could go. And so kind of a lot of stuff happens in the plot, but Akira ends up winning that tournament in the end, and Haruo gets depressed and is unable to, you know, properly convey his feelings to it for her. And for a brief period of time, before she goes to leave for LA, he's down and depressed and just doesn't know what to do. He lost his chance to be with her in his mind. They had their final confrontation, she won, and he felt like he has no right to confess to her and express his love for her. This is all kind of stupid high schooler thought, obviously, but that's where it is. He even, by way of her sister Makoto, sends back the ring he won for her in the spooky, you know, ghost arcade from season one, and he takes that as a sign that it's over, she's leaving, there's nothing he can do. They had their final confrontation, and that's it, they're done now. Obviously, he's wrong and a complete idiot, so several characters end up having to kick his ass in gear, including Makoto, his mother, and Koharu, actually. Prior to this, final confrontation between Akira and Haruo, Koharu and Akira actually have their final confrontation over their feelings for Haruo, and they try to settle it there. This is done entirely from Koharu's perspective. In her mind, she ends up losing to Akira's feelings, and so she decides that I have to give up, that I can't beat her in this. Their bond is out of this world special. Her love for Haruo, far exceeds her own. However, what we learn later is that Akira has to go to LA, is being forced to move. And so from Akira's perspective, this was an attempt to gauge Koharu's feelings for Haruo and see if, essentially, she's worthy to step in once Akira's gone. And so there's this fascinating dynamic between the two of them that's playing out over, essentially, them hanging out for a day. Akira's kind of dragging around, playing games and having fun. And then they finally get to kind of the meat of what they were both there for, and they have kind of one final battle. Koharu actually kind of disappears for the final arc. The couple episodes where Akira and Haruo go to Osaka and have that tournament, Koharu's nowhere to be seen here, but she reappears in the final episode to essentially kick Haruo on the ass for not understanding any of what Akira was trying to convey with the things she was doing. And obviously you can't help but think if Akira just told him about these things, he would figure it out, but Haru was actually super dense himself, and so this is not surprising. But other characters end up having to kick him into gear to get him to realize truly what was going on and how much Akira means to him and that he needs to go. It's the day she's flying off to LA and he's moping around, and Koharu explains what happened between her and Akira, and this is when we finally get to learn kind of Akira's side of what happened there. She's cut her hair short, which obviously means character development. She's moved on and she's decided that, like, no, the two of you need to be a thing. And then Haru is like, sorry, I love Akira. And she's like, hey, I get it. I know. Duh. And so she kicks him in the ass and he races off to meet Akira at the airport, only to learn that her plane's already taken off. And we get this really cool sequence of him on a scooter riding to the airport with all these game characters cheering him on and doing all kinds of like stop and traffic thing. It's really great. Her plane has to come back due to turbulence, and so through storytelling magic, he makes it there, and she's actually just come back. And true to the 90s, there's no kind of crazy security or anything like that. Coming from someone who, you know, in 2020, looking back at 90s airport security, or the lack thereof, where she walks off the plane and he waltzed right in, and they're in the same space, it was fascinating. I completely forgot what the world was like back then. Anyway, a little side tangent. But yeah, so she disembarks the plane, sees him, and he sees her, and they just run at each other and embrace in this giant hug. And he confesses, and well, she doesn't say anything, but she also sort of does. And he's like, our rivalry is not over. I love you. I don't care if you go to America. I'll get a passport. We'll do whatever we need to. That kind of thing. He's like, I'm never letting you go. Here's your ring back. And they essentially agree to marry. So you've clearly got it by now, but Akira wins. Akira and Haruo end up together at the end of the series. Like I said, I felt like this was inevitable. This series could never go another way. Koharu never had a real chance. I didn't think. I liked her character, and I thought she brought some good story and conflict and development to the story, and complemented our main characters well, but I never saw this as a true love triangle. I saw it as Akira and Haruo clearly loved each other. Haruo was too dense to do anything, and Akira was too tied up into her own circumstances to really make any moves, and so Koharu jumped in and was like, hey, what about me? And while I like her, the main thrust of the story has always been Akira and Haruo's relationship and their rivalry in fighting games. So this ending makes perfect sense. They end up together, she still ends up having to fly off to LA, but the series ends with a fairly definitive answer to the romance portion. I was kind of worried they wouldn't fully resolve things with Koharu, but they do. They actually really leave the relationship between Koharu and Haruo off in a good place. There's proper closure there for her, and so I'm really glad that they ended up getting that. One kind of interesting note is that the manga author published an epilogue chapter later on, and it's a short little chapter that shows Akira once she's boarded the plane and how like ecstatic she is over what just happened with Haruo, and then her landing in LA and meeting with her mother, who I think this is the first time or only time in the series we get to see her mother or either of her parents. Her mother's going over this list of like potential suitors, which are all end up being like video game characters, and it's all told in this kind of gag. And she ends up saying that, all right, well, none of them work anymore because of XYZ, so we're gonna have to find you someone new. But also, hey, I heard someone proposed to you in the airport. You know, what's that about? Obviously, that's not gonna work, and blah, blah, blah. And it's kind of a joke. It's kind of done in a joking manner. You know, the final panel is Akira kind of facing away with her, like, ugh, I can't believe I have to deal with this face, thinking of Haruo and imagining a passport and essentially being like, when are you going to get here so I can see you again? And it's just a little cute, funny, short epilogue chapter. I would personally love to see the story continue and see them play video games through the early 2000s or even later, them as adults playing more modern games. I love the characters, and I love everything they've set up here, so I'd really love to see a continuation, personally. So while I think it's totally cool to let the series end here, and I'm always a big fan of tighter, more controlled stories that have a proper ending, I do think this particular series has some room to tell more stories, especially as the characters age. We could follow them through some of the other eras of video games, but I'm not sure if that's a thing we're going to get or not. And while there's no news on anything like that, we do actually have a manga spin-off sequel series that exists called High Score Girl Dash, and it's about Koharu as a middle school teacher in 2007. She's actually a teacher with Doi, who is another character there, and you see some recurring faces, Miao, for example. At least as far as I'm aware, there's been no mention of Haruo or Akira. They haven't made appearances as of yet, and there's been no kind of indication on where they end up, because this series is wholly focused on Koharu. Well, I think that's pretty cool. We are going to get to see those mid-2000s games, I assume, and we get to focus on Koharu now that the love triangle was properly resolved. I'd really love for the series to reintroduce Haruo and Akira at some point and bring them back into the story, and we'll have like a proper sequel. But for now, this remains kind of a spin-off. It is a continuation for a number of the characters. So if you liked it, this is definitely more. And I think the humor is still there, but it is a very different series. I'd love to see this licensed and published in English. So Square Enix, please get on that. But it would probably make sense for them to finish publishing the original series first, of which there are only 2 volumes out for, of 6. So maybe once that's done, we'll get High Score Girl Dash. Wishful thinking. Anyway, to kind of wrap all of this up, I'll just say that High Score Girl, and especially Season 2, is not necessarily the greatest series ever. It's not a masterpiece, but it is an incredibly fun and funny, nostalgic, and just really cute anime series about a bunch of nerds playing video games in an arcade in the 90s. And I think they do a really great job introducing and fleshing out our main characters. And I think Season 2 in particular wraps things up in a good, strong way and continued to expand on the foundation Season 1 built. We get a lot of cool fighting game and arcade game visuals, and this is just overall a really heartwarming, fun show. I love it. It's only 24 episodes in total, including Season 2. I'd easily recommend this to anyone. I mean, I have, and I am right now currently, but especially for anyone who grew up in the 90s, who played those games, who spent any time at all in an arcade. I know this is kind of Japanese arcades, but you know, we had arcades in the West in America too back then. This series is just such a blast from the past, and I really love all the characters. They're such dorks. So if you're looking for a light, funny, and just easy to watch romantic comedy series, please definitely check out High Score Girl. 24 episodes on Netflix. Watch it in the original Japanese or the English dub, however the fuck you want, but definitely don't sleep on this. Alright, I've rambled on long enough. Thanks for listening. Follow my Twitter, I am Doc Pei, for updates. If you like the show, please leave a review wherever you listen to this podcast. Subscribe and listen to Docupied wherever you listen to podcasts. I'll catch you next time.